Hour number three of Overdrive, but hour number one on TSN 2. So welcome to everybody watching out there in TSN 2. Jim Taddy, Dave Festchuk with you, proving that once again it is actually, truly, Mail It In Friday.
Big time.
Yeah.
Yes, but I think we're given that kind of half-hearted Mail It In effort, right? Like,
oh, speak for yourself.
Yeah. Oh, yeah? Is that right? Is this the hologram Taddy speaking here?
I'm having a blast here. You know, I haven't done the show for quite some time, and
Dave,
it's always refreshing to jump into somebody else's show, make a mess of it, and then leave.
Yeah, Dave, you want to know why Jim's having such a good time? Because you're right, that is hologram Jim, and he's actually, real Jim's on his way home right now.
Yes. Love that.
Yeah, it's all coming together.
Now,
it could be that hologram Jim is on his way home.
O-Dog will be stealing that one from you, too, just like the other stuff he steals.
It's, you know, he does it with affection. I don't quite get the affection, but I know he means it with affection. Not very affectionate for me, but nonetheless, you know, that's his style.
Love it. I could see. Could you not see the O-Dog like getting the technology patent to have hologram O-Dog in studio while he's beating it down the 401?
I think he's already done it and hasn't told. I've seen a couple of his performances. They couldn't have been real. Well, I'm going to pay for that.
Yes, you will.
Ron Smith from the TSN, CFL and TSN play-by-play booth will be by very shortly. Argos in Hamilton tonight against the Tiger Cats, and this is the second of 4 in 5 weeks with these two. Wow.
4 in 5 weeks.
Yeah, that's
crazy.
Yeah.
Big stuff going on around the CFL, though. Like, how about Winnipeg losing last night? Like, 9-1 now? Montreal knocks them off after an incredible start by that dominant team out in the Prairie. Just when you thought the East had no chance against the West.
Look at that game, 20-17. I think the over-under was something like 46. It was in the 40s.
Yeah.
I would have taken the over, and I would have taken Winnipeg to have an easy game.
To blow
game
them out.
So that's why I don't bet.
Yeah.
What do I know?
Exactly. No, it was a wild one, and I guess a little bit of a hiccup in the field goal kicking, which has become kind of a standard thing in the CFL these days. I'm not sure why it is, but it's been a tough year for the field goal kickers in clutch moments, and Winnipeg certainly felt that last night. But, yeah, you're right. You talk about unpredictability. And Grappler was just in here talking about contemplating betting on NFL preseason.
That's a sickness.
That could be a sickness that needs diagnosis and quickly, or it could get worse fast.
Go ahead, Grappler.
No, listen, I really have nothing to say to defend myself other than the fact that I didn't actually end up betting on it, which I guess is...
that's a redeeming quality.
Saving myself in some small little way, but...
Yeah,
listen, like I said, it's, you know, the preseason's only another few weeks, so then I can get... I look forward to betting on actual regular season football, and then next year's preseason is when I might take a very dangerous dive.
Wow.
I hope the
finances,
keep up.
You've got a year to prepare the finances.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, he's just trying to keep up with Hayes. Hayes was on the first preseason game of the NFL season, that Hall of Fame game. He was right on top of it, wagering heavily, I believe.
Yeah. I love when people text me when I'm on the air. One of my favorites, because I haven't shut the phone off.
We heard that back here.
Yeah.
And I'm pretty sure that's your own fault for not having your phone on sound. People can text you all they want.
I know, but and that's fine. But what will happen now is I'll hologram and real Jim will drive home, and I'll forget to turn it back on.
Right, and you miss all the texts.
Yeah, so it takes me like a day and a half to remember to turn it back on. and I say, well, I'm on the air, sorry guy. That's where sorry guy comes
sorry
in.
Guy.
Something that O has done from time to time when he's off the show is he'll call Hayes at like 4:45 when he's doing the show.
I used to do that to O.
It's like, you know, I'm hosting a show right now. Yeah. Why are you calling?
I did that to O. I text him.
On air?
Yeah, of course.
Just to take him off.
And by the way, that was my buddy Perry Lefko, who wanted to pump the show, which is Yes Guy, which airs tomorrow at noon on TSN 1050. Replays on Sunday morning. So tomorrow we have Donovan Bailey, Marshall Ferguson, and Kevin Attard, who's a trainer at Woodbine, talking about, Kevin is, the Queen's Plate, which races a week Sunday. You can watch that on CTV or TSN.
So Lefko hitting you up for the shameless plug of your Yes Guy show.
Yeah, he did the double text.
Wow.
Yeah.
Demanding a plug, and you gave it to him.
Well, because I don't want four texts.
Just to shut him down.
I'm sure you've met him and you know that he's not going to give up.
He can be persistent.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, let's talk about the CFL and TSN. And from the play-by-play booth, Rod Smith is here. Rod, how are you today, sir?
Good, Jim. Nice to get ready for another game, and it's a beautiful night here at Tim Hortons Field. So good to talk to you guys.
Oh, you are literally in the booth getting set.
I am.
Well, yeah, so, absolutely. I mean, these two teams play each other four times in 5 weeks. That's a little much, isn't it?
It is to me. I mean, and especially the last one is on Labor Day. Last year they played three times, and it was spread out over a shortened season. You know, it didn't even start until early August, and their first meeting was on Labor Day Monday at least, and of course they played again in the Eastern Final. But, I mean, how you had a shortened season with that rivalry spread out over the same number of games, and this one, for them, there are a few quirks of this. You know, I say it politely about the schedule this year that I didn't quite get, and this is one of them, because it's a great rivalry, but I don't know how things are going to be when they play for the fourth time in 5 weeks on the traditional rivalry day on Labor Day Monday.
Okay, well, let's deal with the football angle here. As I'm led to believe, when you play the same team twice, when you're structuring your playbook, you have to hide things for the second game. But when you're playing them four times in 5 weeks, that's a real challenge, isn't it?
I can't imagine anything new. That would really be something if they're saving it, you know, say for a Labor Day game for four times in 5 days. But no, you're right. Sometimes in back-to-backs, you do get a bit of that. But I don't think there will be any mystery between these two. And if it was a hated rivalry before, I can only imagine the tension by early September when they play for the fourth time in 5 days.
So, Rod, obviously big game tonight, Toronto-Hamilton at Tim Hortons Field. Last night, a big moment in any season when a team that hadn't lost in the Winnipeg Blue Bombers finally showed a little bit of humanity and dropped one in overtime to the Montreal Alouettes in Winnipeg 2017. Field goal kicking this one, a big reason for the result. What's going on with CFL field goal kickers this year, Rod?
Well, it's an interesting question, Dave. I feel for them all because it's a lot of the stuff is taken for granted inside the 30. And you're right. We had David Cote of the Alouettes, so I'm sure last night could feel the pain of Mark Leggio because he had the victory on his foot against the Argos back in week two from 21 yards, and he missed it left. And then you had Boris Beattie against Winnipeg to possibly force overtime on an extra point. So that would have been a 32-yarder.
Yeah.
And he put it wide left. Both of those were at BMO. And then you had what Leggio did, not only last night, which was to win it, but then, you know, maybe compensating, pushing it more to the right in overtime that would have extended that game and then hitting the upright. So he was, what, 18 of 20 or 19 of 21 hitting into that kick that could have won it for them. The percentages have not been that bad. But you're right. I can't recall a season where so many what look like gimme kicks or ones you'd assume that CFL kickers would make have missed them. And not in situations where the wind was ridiculous or it was in the middle of a rainstorm or something like that. I mean, very makeable kicks. And it's puzzling. And what a way for the winning streak for the Bombers to come to an end as well. But there's still a lot of great kickers in the CFL.
Right.
But we've had some moments that have been less than that, to be sure.
Yeah, so maybe the year of the missed kicks, but it should have been the year of the hash mark move and how people have exploited that. What have you seen that way?
Well, I've asked a few people about it just to see. One conversation we had was the Z receiver, the field side wideout. Like the best case example is probably Curly Gittens because he's still the top receiver for the Argos. And one of the best young Canadian receivers in the CFL has been just getting a lot more, you know, catches. He's getting a lot more targets this year. And we were wondering, is it because, you know, the wide side of the field isn't as wide? But any coach I've talked to about it doesn't think that that's it at all. You know, McLeod Bethel-Thompson has a strong arm. He knows Gittens is a good receiver, and he's been willing to throw that longer ball. And it's worked out well. From what I have, you know, talking to people that know more about the finer points, the X's and O's of football than I do, it's been exaggerated a bit what kind of difference moving the hash marks in has made. You know, the wide side's not as wide, the boundary side is not as narrow, and so you can be a little more creative offensively. But I have not heard anyone definitively say that this has made offense a lot better. This has created a lot more opportunities.
So a little bit of social media buzz, Rod, from Chad Johnson, sometimes known as Ocho Cinco to some. Sorry, on a podcast talking about his time in the CFL and really waxing eloquently and pretty enthusiastically about the level of play in the CFL. And I guess those of us who watch the game regularly, you know, we're like, duh, it's obviously played by some great athletes. But what does that do for the sport, for the league, to have a player with that kind of a social media following and that kind of a presence sort of hype it up in that way?
I think it's neat, and he's not the first to do it. There have been others, you know, that have played in the CFL, some successfully, some. Like in his case, he wasn't up in the CFL for long, and I think he found it a lot tougher than he expected. But, you know, I think it's nice to hear, it's nice to read, because I personally, loving both leagues as I do, but being born and raised on the CFL, have seen so many great athletes in this league, and it's nice to see them get the recognition, especially if people read about it or hear about it, that might have the preconceived notion that everything about the NFL, every single thing, is absolutely better. Yes, it's bigger and there are great, great athletes, but there are a lot of very good athletes, great athletes in the CFL as well, and it's nice to hear someone that knows both leagues, at least came up and gave the CFL a shot late in his career when he was no longer, you know, in the NFL, of course. I think it's nice to see. It's nice to see the league get some recognition that way.
I mean, maybe we can make the point that the CFL is the best league or the most fun to play, because I think there's more player input than the other leagues. Would you agree with that?
I think, once again, that's something I hear, and I just judge it, you know, as someone who watches it and likes the differences. Even though I like the NFL, I do like the differences about I like the tempo, the pace on the 20-second clock, and I don't mind the three downs because of, you know, the greater importance and involvement of special teams, the punt returns, things like that. Not that, you know, you don't want to see a game entirely a two and out and punting. I don't mean that, but there are just certain characteristics about the CFL and all the comebacks we've been seeing this year too, that no lead appears to be safe, that I've really enjoyed. I've never been one for comparisons. You'd never hear me, you know, trash the NFL and say the CFL is better. I enjoy them both. There are different brands of football. There are obviously, you know, things in common, aspects of the game, blocking and tackling and passing and running and all those things, but I still do enjoy the differences, and I'm glad to see, despite all the talk in the offseason of proposals and ideas to, you know, maybe Americanize the game further and the questions about the number of downs, I'm old school that way, and I like the league to stay the way it is. And I think this year so far, compared to last year, which understandably suffered, I think, from very limited training camps, no preseason games, and they kind of had to hit the ground running in a shortened season. I think it's been more dramatic this year. There's been some really exciting games.
I don't know if you saw the clip, Rod, speaking a little bit about the NFL, but sort of, you know, relaying it to your line of work. Washington Commanders president Jason Wright was critical of a reporter who was questioning Carson Wentz, of course, the Commanders' quarterback, and the question, the line of questioning was essentially, Carson Wentz, you know, you've been run out of Philly, you know, you didn't have a good year in Indy, and now you're in Washington, and essentially, you know, is this your last chance to sort of prove yourself as a legitimate NFL quarterback? I didn't think it was out of line. The president of the Commanders, you know, insinuated that this reporter would have difficulty getting access in the future, and really was uncomplimentary of the style of the interview. You know, how do you approach that type of stuff, Rod? When you're trying to ask, you know, most people would consider reasonable questions, well, of course, towing the line of being, you know, good TV and friendly enough to the guests to have them on again.
I don't think it's an unfair line of questioning, just listening to you talk about it, Dave, and you well know, too, and all the athletes that you've interviewed, that sometimes I think you have a responsibility to ask a question if other people are thinking it, and it's reasonable. I think that's a reasonable question given what Carson Wentz has been through in his career, and I think there'd be I think he would have a good way of answering. I don't know how he answered that question, but I don't think that that's unfair. I mean, it might be unfair to you know, ask Tom Brady if he thinks he'll ever win another Super Bowl. Like, well, even that question I don't think is unreasonable now, but you know, I guess some athletes, based on all the success they've had on the field, might deserve or get more benefit of the doubt. But I think, you know, I don't know where the line is drawn. I certainly don't think that that question is over the line.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think within reason, if people, you know, if it's a fairly obvious story and a lot of people are wondering about it, I don't see the harm in asking that question, because the athlete has the power to, or the coach or whoever you're talking about, it certainly has the power, you know, as long as their answer isn't being edited out or tampered with or anything like that, to, even if they don't like the line of questioning, defend themselves or plead their case as to why it's ridiculous, even call it a ridiculous question. But I certainly don't. I don't take offense to somebody asking Carson Wentz a question like that.
Yeah, no, it's just, I think it brings up a point about, you know, the expectation in an era where there's a lot of player-generated content. There's a, you know, there's a lot of fan-generated content. You know, sometimes there's an expectation of, for lack of a better term, fluff questions. And I don't know if you feel that sometimes, or how do you look at it?
Not in mine. And as I say, I'm probably, in what I do now, I was probably closer to it when I was hosting, and certainly when I was a reporter at TSN. And I know, as I say, all these years, you've been closer to that than I have been.
Sure.
But I know what you mean. If you're talking about, if you're a rights holder, I still think, and I defer to the people that we have, our insiders, the people we have covering CFL. And I know for them, I've never thought that they were covering up a story, going too soft on a story, if it was something that people were talking about and an issue that had to be addressed. I mean, you know, that sounds like internal bias because I'm talking about colleagues, yeah. But I personally don't think that we have had that concern. And as I say, we are rights holders and have been for a long time exclusively covering the CFL.
Rod, I want to take you back to a lot of that off-season talk, and really the ultimate answer is the quarterback for the BC Lions, isn't it? I mean, that's a great story.
It's amazing. I can't get my head around. I'm a kid born in the 60s in Ottawa. So you know where I'm going with this. I mean, Russ Jackson was everything.
Yep.
I mean, starting here in Hamilton where I am now in McMaster, but then everything he did in the CFL as a Canadian quarterback. And quite honestly, I didn't know if anyone like him would ever come along again. Now, Nathan Rourke still has, would still have to do it over the course of a long career. Russ Jackson started for 12 years in the CFL. But what he is doing now, I never thought I'd see again. And not because there wouldn't be a Canadian quarterback good enough. It's not that. It was more about opportunity. Would the stigma be so strong that Canadian QBs just wouldn't get the chance? And not only we've seen it with him in just his second year, and even seen it out of a Canadian university, one opportunity, albeit in Trey Ford, and I still wonder what kind of career he could possibly have. But Rourke is like nothing I don't think anyone could have imagined. The only thing I will say about this, Jim and Dave, is I got to call his first ever CFL start, and it was by accident when BC was at Saskatchewan in the opener last year that Michael Riley decided at the last second he couldn't go, and Rourke was thrown into the fire in his CFL debut, threw a pick six, Nick Marshall intercepted for a touchdown for Saskatchewan. Everything went wrong in that game, and yet they did come back, and he was part of that comeback too, even though Riley came on with, you know, half the ability to throw that he normally would have. They came back and nearly won that game. But the poise that Rourke had showed, even in that, you know, bad debut for him, was really something to remember. He didn't look like the moment was too big. He had no deer in the headlights look. And it's really gratifying to see how he has developed now, to not just show that he can play in the league, but be an absolute star, the top player right now in the Canadian Football League. And everybody just wants to see how much further he can take this, because, I mean, he's a star. And I don't know of anyone who would have predicted that at the start of the season.
Yeah, he's the kind of player, Rod, that makes you think about, you know, not only what he can do for himself and for his team, but what he can do to maybe change the game. Like, do you, it's easy to say this. We always talk about guys who change the game, but do you foresee, or could you foresee a situation where, as you talked about, the stigma that Canadians can't play quarterback because we just haven't produced them? I mean, we got one that's made the NFL and Jesse Palmer, and as you point out, you have to go back a long way to find a Canadian that's been able to dominate the CFL at that position. Do you think there's a possibility that this guy, and I guess he's got a younger brother, Curtis, who's also a heck of a talent, come out of the same Ohio University that produced Nathan, do you think that this family maybe could maybe change our perception of Canada and quarterbacks?
I think it will. I think it has already. And as I say, I bring up Trey Ford's name again, not to compare him to what Nathan Rourke's doing. Trey Ford still has a long way to go, and unfortunately he doesn't have a chance to prove it anymore right now because he's hurt, but because he comes from a Canadian university, and that's the next thing. I mean, Nathan Rourke and Curtis playing at Ohio, and I think for kids growing up that they see that example, especially Nathan Rourke, and I absolutely think it could change things in a generation in terms of not only the ability of Canadian quarterbacks, but that perception that it has to be an American position, and open. You know, I think there are already a lot of open-minded coaches about it. I know Chris Jones at Edmonton had talking to him about it, and Rick Campbell obviously is. But I think it'll make others in the game even more open-minded to give Canadian kids more of a look. And I think it's terrific. As I say, I've been a fan of the CFL for over 50 years, and I'm still shocked to see the extent of which has happened so soon in the case of Nathan Rourke and the BC Lions.
Rod, let's talk about the game you're about to call. Hamilton at home to the Argonauts, and I always go with the team that really can't afford to lose, and that would be Hamilton. If they're to lose this game, they're in deep trouble, aren't they?
I would think so. With that stunning win by Montreal, Jim, last night in Winnipeg to move 2 points ahead of them. The sad dynamic right now for the East Division, the way it appears, and it's been a few years since this has been the case, but, you know, if the season were over now, there would be a crossover, and only two teams in the East would make the playoffs. If the Argos win tonight and they move 4 up on Hamilton, and Montreal is 2 up on the Ticats, although Hamilton did win head-to-head, it's just going to put more pressure on the Ticats to find their way into the top two because, it's sad, and they still have the Argos two more times after this. So it's just it gets a whole lot tougher, I think, for the Ticats if they don't win this one tonight and they stay and they fall to 2-7. That's the halfway point of their season, and you know that just doesn't project very well for their chances right now. Depending on what the Alouettes do, I think the Argos are. I think they're starting to build again on what they had going last year, despite all the significant changes that they've made. And if there's any kind of separation more in the East, I think you're just going to see a lot more pressure for even that number two spot, that duel right now between Montreal, who's ahead, and the Ticats. I look back to two games in particular. Week two here against Calgary when Hamilton had a 24-0 lead, and then the 2 weeks later against Edmonton when they had a double-digit lead anyway in the second half, I think heading into the third quarter, and a costly turnover has just killed them in both of those games. And we'd be talking about a different, ifs and buts, candies and nuts, I realize it, but we'd be talking about a different Ticat situation if they could just hang on to a lead. Case in point again, last week in Toronto.
Hey, Rod, I know you're a guy who knows your way around a broadcast booth, and I know you got a great appreciation for the broadcasters that have come before you. I was wondering about your reaction to the Harry Carey hologram at last night's Major League Baseball Field of Dreams game. I don't know if you saw it, but it was some sort of a artificial representation of the late Harry Carey singing Take Me Out to the Ball Game in the seventh inning stretch. How do you feel about the departed brethren and sisterhood of the broadcast booth being represented in such a way?
I can't imagine Harry Carey having a problem with it. Never knew the man, but he was such a showman. You know what? Microphone in one hand and he'd have a Budweiser in the other.
Exactly.
Part of the tradition. I still remember, guys. Remember 1987 when, unfortunately, he got sick? I think he had a stroke. And this tradition, he himself singing Take Me Out to the Ball Game, they had a whole bunch of people, a lot of celebrities, taking his spot, singing Take Me Out to the Ball Game until he was healthy enough to come back later that season. It was just amazing to see the effect that he had, not only in Chicago and the Cubs, but in all of baseball. As just one of the characters of the game. And I haven't seen it. But as I say, I can't imagine that the late Harry Carey has been gone, a long time now. I can't imagine he'd have a problem with ever the showman, right?
Very, very quickly, Rod, Schultz starts for Hamilton tonight?
He does. Dane Evans suffered a shoulder injury last week in Toronto. So Matthew Schultz, he had 3 starts last year before Trevor Harris took over from him in Montreal. But one of his starts was against the Argos, and I think he took them by surprise. They ran really well that night, too, and they beat the Argos, I think, by 3 touchdowns in Montreal. So Ryan Dinwiddie knows all about Matthew Schultz, and I can't imagine Toronto taking him lightly.
Rod, thanks very much. Really appreciate it, especially, you know, an hour before our game time, or before the game kicks off.
Yeah, Jim, Dave, thank you, guys. My pleasure.
Thanks, Rod.
Okay, just a minute. Okay, everything's fixed now. Oh, boy. Well, I mean, and he gave a really nice answer on the Canadian quarterback. That's a great story.
It really is. I mean, the kid's just dream come true for this league, isn't he? I mean,
that's exactly what they needed. You can say whatever you want. That's what you need. Coming up next, we'll talk baseball with Keegan Matheson. This is Overdrive on TSN 2 and TSN 1050. Wow, where'd that go? Final half hour of the broadcast for a mail-it-in Friday. Jim Taddy and Dave Festchuk with you. First appearance together since the Leafs elimination game.
Ooh.
That's a long time ago, isn't it?
Does seem like eons ago.
Seems like it was a couple of years ago.
It seems like it happens an awful lot.
The scar remains.
Well, we've just seen a few of those, right? They're all a blur.
Yeah, Game 7. Yeah, we've seen a few of them. Absolutely. Blown series lead. Yeah, seen a few of those.
Yes.
Okay. Well, let's talk about the Blue Jays. Barrios tonight, White tomorrow, Gosman on Sunday against Cleveland. Cleveland's in town. Jays have had 2 days off now thanks to a rainout and a scheduled day off. Keegan Matheson at the ball yard and we're pleased to have him join us now. Keegan, welcome. How are you tonight, sir?
I'm doing well. I am pleased to be here, Jim. You assume correctly.
I just wanted to sort of, it's subliminal, right? I'm into the subliminal half hour now. I'm going to throw words out there to lead you. And so here's another one. I'm afraid. Should I be afraid of the Jays or where are we with that?
They tend to make you nervous pretty often, don't they? They look so good for a week or two, and then the problems, those same problems come up. A lot of the time that's been the bullpen. Sometimes that's been rotation depth. Right now with Yusei Kikuchi, sometimes it's Jose Berrios. Will he look great tonight, or will he look like the 5.5 ERA Berrios? We'll see. You can typically tell an inning or so in, but it's been very inconsistent. And inconsistencies are what worry you. And when you have a team that's this talented, but in baseball, just given how the game is played, your worst player, your 26th man on the roster, or your worst skill as a team, whether it's on the bases or defense, it gets exposed. It takes its turn to get exposed eventually, and we've seen that with the Blue Jays sometimes along the way. So a frustrating mix of incredible talent, but also some inconsistencies from time to time, and that's why this is such a tight playoff race when really it shouldn't be.
Let's get to some positive things, Keegan. And I guess one of them today was the development that George Springer, who, of course, has had some issues being available for the club since he came to Toronto. George Springer was out there, or at least maybe in the cage, hitting. He's talking about throwing. In other words, the prognosis is he could be back to playing in a reasonable time frame. What do you make of that?
Great news for the Blue Jays. It could be as early as Monday. We'll see if it's ready by then. But over the last year and a half, I mean, goodness, I've spent so much time talking about a variety, a dozen different injuries with George Springer. None of them have seemed to have simple timelines or simple comebacks. And haven't spent as much time talking about the fact that this is just a fantastic ball player when he is healthy. To have George Springer as your leadoff man is an immediate advantage in any game you are playing. That's a rare thing to have atop your lineup, but they need him healthy. It was an awkward kind of stumble into this IL stint where, is he going to play today? Is he not? Is he healthy? Is he not? Finally, they shut him down, which I think was the right decision at last, and it's looking like he's going to come back closer to his full self, and his full self is a star player. You know, there's a reason he's on that $150 million contract, and he needs to be the leader of that lineup from the top down because it looks a lot better when he's leading off and Gurriel's in the middle hitting for a little more power.
Keegan, if we were to talk at the end of September and it's the reverse of last season whereby there isn't that September fade, everybody's healthy and it works out, who leads the way? Who is turning that story around for us?
Needs to be Vladdy. It always needs to be Vladdy because what he is capable of at his best, nobody else in this lineup can do. Now, George Springer is a star player. Bo Bichette can be a star player. We've seen from top to bottom, all-star caliber bats. Nobody does what Vlad does when he's at his very best. That's a bat that can change games. I think back to, goodness, this would be mid-April, guys, in New York, when he had his hand stepped on, stitches in his hand, dripping blood, hit 3 home runs. Just one of those iconic Vladdy performances that showed how he can take over a game and really take over a moment. He's not scared of those big moments and big games. But it needs to be him. Now, playing to an 850 OPS, that's great. For most players, that's a career year. Fantastic. But he's someone capable of hitting 300, hitting 45 home runs, 1,000 OPS. The Blue Jays need that. He's an MVP caliber player. There have been flashes of that. He's certainly on that hitting streak now, which has been great. But a real power outburst and him stealing a few games, frankly, is what this team needs.
Keegan, we've been going over this. The numbers almost don't seem real. When you look at the home road splits for Jose Berríos, he's got a really good ERA in Toronto, which bodes well for tonight when he's starting against the Guardians and Cal Quantrill. 3.23 is the home ERA. The road ERA, almost more than four runs worse. I'm sure you've been asking around for theories on this, and I'm sure you've asked Berríos himself why this is the way it is. What's your best guess on what's actually going on behind those numbers?
He must have a great mattress here in Toronto. I think that's the only thing I can point to. There is something to be said about the comfort of being home, not living out of your suitcase, et cetera, et cetera. But these guys are used to that. That's the lifestyle, and not all of these guys exactly live year-round in Toronto. So it's not the comfort of home that you or I might understand it to be. A lot of it is mystery. You know, this is something that Berríos has tried to figure out himself. It's something he struggled to figure out, and there's some coincidence involved here as well, I'm sure. But that's something that needs to solve itself. There are going to be some big games here down the stretch, and the inconsistencies there have been worrying, because I think the frustrating part for Berríos has been that it's close. This is not like Yusei Kikuchi, where he has no idea where the strike zone is. Mm-hmm. He's close, but then there's just one pitch that gets smoked because he hangs a curveball or a fastball drifts out over. And that's frustrating for a guy who is used to being so consistent, one of the most consistent players in the sport for 5 years. Now you're missing by just a bit. You're going to a place mentally you've never had to be in this much, and that's very frustrating for a pitcher who's used to being the number one guy, leading a staff. Now he is trying to be a number three.
Keegan, I want to go back to the inconsistencies. Because they're back, I mean, that's not the manager's fault, is it? Does it make you at all go back to the decision to change?
Yeah, it's tough for a manager to really get a hand on that so quickly. And I think that John Schneider's style of more aggression on the bases, I like that. That fits this team. That fits their skill set. It fits their energy as well. This is not a bunch of surly veterans stomping around a dugout. You need to read your team's energy. And this is a team that wants to be running, wants to be forcing the issue. And I think it fits them. It really does. But when you are aggressive, sometimes that can lead to more inconsistencies. On the bases, you're going to have days where it works out and everybody involved looks like a genius. Then you're going to have days where you try to steal a base, it does not work, and it's easy to second guess that, just like bullpen decisions. So for the Blue Jays going forward, it's down to the individuals. It's down to the players on the field. Guys like Vladdy, guys like Bo Bichette, I think are two easy ones who are getting closer. I think we're seeing signs, but need to be consistently the players they were in 2021. If that happens, I think we forget a little more easily about the trade deadline, which was a bit underwhelming. We forget about some earlier inconsistencies and skids because they're capable of a lot more than we've seen.
So the Blue Jays didn't play for the last two nights, Keegan. I'm sure you're acutely aware of that as somebody who is intensely involved in every Blue Jays game. The Field of Dreams game, I'm sure you tuned in or at least saw the highlights. What were the highlights for you, and where were you on the Harry Carey hologram? We've been batting that one around on Overdrive today.
Not a hologram fan. When I go, leave me where I go, let me tell you. But or at least bring me back better looking. You know,
well, the younger version always works.
To help me out. Make me sound smarter. I don't know. But I love those games. The having players mic'd up, I love. I'm for it. Joey Votto, of course, whenever he talks, you've got to listen. He's one of the most interesting players in this game. But mic'ing up players and having them on those games is something I'm really for. You know, it's when we talk about appealing baseball to a younger audience, we try to come up with big, fancy ideas. The simplest way is to let the player's personality show. That's what the NBA does so well as a league. And you don't always have to force it. You know, if you're trying to think really hard to come up with an idea, well, that's when you get into the territory of, you know, trying a little too hard and trying to force it down a younger audience's throat. That doesn't work. But I think getting the player's personalities involved more like that is great. I love that setting. You know, I guess it's baseball's equivalent to some, you know, outdoor games in the NHL, stuff like that. I think the unique setting is great. And it made a Cincinnati Reds game watchable. I mean, that's an accomplishment itself.
Yes.
It's interesting to do that once a year. And of course, everyone loves that movie, so I think those days are a good step, you know, for baseball. A little more personality, have some fun with it. And man, the old uniforms, those work sometimes. They're okay.
You know what, I think I want to circle back on the Joey Votto stuff, because as I think about it, I was listening to you talk there, and I was sort of remembering the clips I saw in SportsCenter, and I thought, you know what's undersold on that is he's talking about his father and his, you know, his childhood and wanting to be a Major League Baseball player, which is the direct result of Blue Jay success way back when.
Exactly, and it always goes a little slower than you think like that. It's when you are watching Vince Carter and his success with the Raptors. You don't have Canadian ball players the next year. You have them 6, 7, 10 years down the line getting drafted. In 2015 and 2016, youth baseball numbers spiked then, but you're seeing some more Canadians getting drafted now, kids who came up watching the Blue Jays at that point. You know, in 92 and 93, you see that long circle start to play out again. And as kids get involved at younger ages, you're going to see that a lot with soccer in Canada right now. I think a lot more kids will be getting involved in soccer, and in 10 years there are going to be more stars. It's always a little slower than you think. It doesn't happen the next day, but there's always that connective tissue eventually, and Votto is one who can explain it I think at length and in a very interesting way. Someone who's very introspective on his own career, for good and for bad, and that's interesting. When he eventually retires, he will be in a booth somewhere, I'm sure of it.
Absolutely. Keegan, thanks very much. Enjoy the weekend.
You got it, guys. Take care.
Keegan Mathieson, MLB.com, Blue Jays reporter. And, you know, I like his point, because it's not the kids that are already playing. It's the kid, the really young part of the demographic that's thinking about what to do, and they're inspired by the celebration, the local success, if you will. And
And
so it takes years for that to sort of work its way through the system, but that's the Joey Votto story.
No doubt. No doubt. I mean, look, there's always been baseball in Toronto. There's always been a great baseball culture in Toronto going back before the Blue Jays existed. If you know some old guys, they'll tell you about it. And I've certainly listened to a lot of those stories. But you're right. Nothing can kind of compare with having a major league team that goes to a World Series. And in the build-up to that World Series in the late 80s and early 90s was electric around this town. It was something we hadn't seen before. And I agree. It spawned a generation. It spawned a generation that probably whose best proponent is Joey Votto.
Sure, and for the Raptors, it was Vince Carter, and then there's the championship team, so we'll see that. One could only imagine what would happen if there was a Stanley Cup.
Oh, boy.
One could only imagine.
I can't. It's beyond my imagination.
One can imagine if there's a Stanley Cup.
Yes, I'm not quite old enough to have been around for the most recent one, wasn't so recent.
No, there's nothing recent about 1967.
No?
Nothing at all recent.
In the grand scheme of intergalactic history, maybe there is.
For your weekend assignment, I want you to write down on a piece of paper or maybe on your tablet or whatever you use, things that happened in 1967 right around the time that the Leafs last won their Stanley Cup. And you'll be shocked at how different the world is.
Yes,
those are prehistoric times.
Literally. The last time they won a playoff series, Joe Nieuwendyk was using a wooden stick. So that's how long ago that was.
Well, let's just stay with that one then. The other one's too painful.
I was going to say it's been long enough that they haven't won a freaking playoff series. So it is. No, you're right. It is amazing, but. And I don't know what it would do for hockey if the Leafs, like, hockey culture here isn't going to change if the Leafs win a Stanley Cup, is it? I mean,
well, maybe. We're talking about, you know, very young kids that are watching that haven't really figured out what they want to do. There's sort of an attraction there to being a little kid. Think of yourself when you were that age and what you watched. And
you're right.
I know what I was attracted to, and it led me to this business.
Yeah, you're right. No, and I guess it's. Look, I think kids in Canada grew up believing it's possible to win the Stanley Cup. Maybe not wearing a Maple Leaf jersey. But I think, like, to the point about Nathan Rourke and what that could do for Canadian quarterbacks,
sure,
right?
That's a door opener.
The guy's got a chance to be the most outstanding player in the CFL as a quarterback, which hasn't been done. You know, you have to be a pretty old person to remember a time when that was possible in the form of Russ Jackson. The idea that you got a championship team in Toronto in baseball and basketball – you're right. Those things didn't always seem possible, right?
And far from
hockey in Canada, it's always seemed like it's our birthright. We should do it. We should dominate it. Those sports, not so much. And so I do think those ones have, you know, more of an effect.
Coming up next, sadly, the end of the show. There may be tears. Probably not. Well, there may be viewer tears, but nonetheless, we'll grind on. Overdrive, TSN 2, TSN 1050. Whatever, guy. Final segment of Overdrive for a Friday. Jim Taddy and Dave Feschuk, the original Mail It In crew. I think when they thought of Mail It In Friday, they thought of us too.
I'm pretty sure.
Yeah. Well, time to have some FanDuel best bets. We'll go to the grappler for that.
Thank you, Jim. Appreciate it.
Much.
That was awful.
Yeah.
My goodness.
That was so sincere. Wait a minute. Let me wipe the sincerity off my sleeve.
Is that the hologram grappler?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm on the 401 as we speak. Today's best bets is brought to you by FanDuel. Bet on all your favorite sports teams on the FanDuel Sportsbook app. Looking at Jays Guardians tonight, we got a good pitching matchup between Jose Berrios and Cal Quantrill, son of former Blue Jay Paul Quantrill, of course. Expecting a lot of strikeouts, you can take the over at 3.5 strikeouts for Cal at plus 104, and the over at 4.5 strikeouts for Jose Berrios at minus 102. Then heading over to Yankees Red Sox, I'm expecting Aaron Judge to hit a home run tonight. You got Yathan Ovaldi on the mound for the Red Sox, who has had issues with the long ball this year. Think you got to take Judge to a yard. Can do that at plus 220. Today's best bets are brought to you by FanDuel. Make every moment more and get your winnings fast when you download the FanDuel Sportsbook app today.
Wow. Yes, guy. No, guy.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, drivers and passengers, ooh, bonus round. Bonus
round. You just rolled right with that. I thought we'd catch you off guard.
When's the last time you caught me off guard?
About 2 minutes ago.
Yeah. We were in a commercial break.
Yeah, it doesn't count.
I'm not on guard in a commercial break. That's my downtime.
Okay.
Go ahead, sir.
Yes, guy. No, guy. Do you approve of O-Dog's use of guy on his My Guy team?
Oh, sure, because My Guy is hardly original, so go for it. Yeah, yes, guy, I'm good for that. My Guy, yeah, that's been used to several times.
And I will give a hearty yes, guy, knowing that Taddy's vicious team of pit bull lawyers are on that as we speak, grappler.
True story. Received some paperwork from the trademark office this week, just saying.
Is that paperwork like a holographic or hologram paperwork? Or
no, it's the real stuff.
Okay, so
just saying.
I look forward to seeing that on Monday.
Yeah, oh, you will. No, you'll see it Tuesday when I'm not here.
Court services will be by.
Yeah, okay. You know that line where you've been served?
That's right.
Grappler, you've been served. That's how it works.
You're looking forward to saying that soon, aren't you?
No, I won't be. It'll be some guy you don't expect. Because some guy with a sub bag in his hand going, grappler, yeah, you've been served. And here's your sub. What we'll do that. We'll do it that way.
Okay, I'm looking forward to that. Yeah. I do have one more on the fly, yes guy, no guy, just to wrap up the show here.
Sure.
Yes guy, no guy, the Detroit Lions are a playoff team in 2022.
No guy.
Oh, that has to hurt the tat.
No guy. No, because they've never been legitimate. That's just a regular response.
You're no confidence in the Dan Campbell, Aiden Hutchinson, Hard Knocks stardom?
Oh, well, that sounds great. But, you know, the reality is, that's what you have after you execute and have the right game plan. Well, I'm not convinced they have either one of those two things. Last year, the coach would call for a 4-0, fourth down and go for it in the third quarter in Chicago. It's like, what are you doing?
Yeah. Okay, so let's. What are your expectations for the Lions then? I believe they had
more
three,
wins.
They had three wins last season.
I think they could become the Chicago Bears of last year this year, and Chicago would become last year's Detroit Lions. I think that's just flip them in the standings.
Okay, I can't argue with that.
Bold prediction.
Yeah. Well, you heard it here first. Are we done?
You're the host. It's up to you.
Well, you said. See, you didn't give me the proper out time. He said you could go at 54 or 55, but it says 5-minute break, so that's 55.
And see that, like, what did I tell you at the start of the show that I might throw some little just tricks on the lineup to throw you off? And I think I did that quite well.
Well, we're going to 55 now.
Are we now?
Well, we have to because we've crossed 54. So, do you have another yes guy, no guy?
I might. Yes guy, no guy. An ice hockey tournament in August can be a success.
Yes, guy, especially if Canada wins the gold. Yes, guy, it can be.
Oh, yes, guy, for the players. Yes, guy, for the coaching staffs and for the organizers. Yes, guy, but, for the fans, I'm not sure people are that excited about it. It's. I mean, people are waiting for the Christmas version. And guess what? There will be one.
Yeah, in Canada, too. Yeah. So, let's not underscore that. Halifax and Moncton, right? East Coast.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. So we.
But you know what, McTavish and Bedard.
I wish
man.
We had more time. Love sorry, it. Sorry to say. I hope everybody has a great weekend. Thanks for stopping by. Adios.